On the last episode of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers.
When we arrived at the Davis home, we found a dead Dedrick Davis.
That night, Remy ran from the house. She was hysterical. All she saw was a man running out the back door. She didn't see his face. And he had a Peanuts beanie hat on. You know, like Snoopy, Woodstock.
This was personal. Someone wanted Dedrick dead.
Now, Remy was just a mess.
He had several eyewitnesses who said the employee, 57-year-old Joe Billingsley, he was overheard saying, "I'll feed you to my dogs," before he stormed out of Dedrick's office.
I noticed it was covered in dog hair, and I immediately thought of Joe and his pack of Great Danes.
It was a Peanuts beanie hat, all right? But the dog hair on it was evident. We were hoping for a Great Dane match. And, that's exactly what we got.
Remy told me that night Dedrick was killed that she believed Joe had something to do with it.
Something didn't sit right. And he swore up and down he didn't have anything to do with this. And I believed him. Dog hair, DNA, wasn't enough to convict a man of murder. I knew I needed more. We needed to take a good, hard look at Remy. So that's what I did.
Now, there was no doubt whatsoever that those two were in love.
Grief isn't the only thing that makes people cry. Regrets do too.
Those were tears of grief.
And now, episode 2 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. Remy Davis claimed she was washing dishes on the crisp, cool October night that her husband, Dedrick, was murdered in their upstairs bedroom by a mystery man in a Peanuts beanie hat. She said she never saw the intruder's face, only his back as he rushed out the door of the home on the lakeside cove and disappeared into the dark. As Lieutenant Columbus, a 22-year veteran in the Lake Ripley Police Homicide Department, scoured over photos of the crime scene on the night of the murder, something stood out to him.
Remy says she was washing dishes when the murder took place, but the sink wasn't wet. No dishes drying on a rack, no damp towel or dish gloves on the counter. In fact, there were two bowls of melted ice cream in the sink. I concluded that it was Rocky Road. This immediately put up a red flag.
Lieutenant Columbus didn't reach out to Remy Davis right away about the discrepancy in her recollection of the night's events. He kept this observation to himself and continued to dig deeper.
I needed a motive. In my 22 years of experience as a homicide detective and overhearing episodes of Snap when my wife watches it, I knew if Remy did this, that it would most likely lead back to lust, greed, or wrath. So I investigated Dedrick and Remy's marriage and kept an eye out for those deadly sins.
Dedrick was a poor boy from St. Louis who happened to meet sociolite Remy at a Dierks Bentley concert in the summer of 2015. They immediately hit it off, and despite Dedrick's poor upbringing, Remy's parents, wealthy horse breeders Janelle and John Appaloosa, welcomed Dedrick into their family.
Yeah, John and I loved Dedrick from the moment we met him. He adored our little girl, and we didn't even mind when he often showed up in boots and he ruined our black tie affair. We were happy to put a large down payment on their home in Lake Ripley. Dedrick was a hard worker, but just he didn't make enough money at the dog food factory. So we lent him and Remy money here and there. We really didn't see the problem with it.
But there was a problem, according to Remy. Remy told Lieutenant Columbus Dedrick's paycheck put food on the table and paid the bills, but it did not pay for his expensive hobby, his addiction, fishing.
I went to my parents for money a lot, but most of the time I lied to them about why I needed it. I told them I wanted to buy things for myself, jewelry, clothes, expensive handbags, 700 thread count sheets from Pottery Barn. But that money was really for Dedrick. I didn't want my parents to know he had a problem spending money on fishing and resent him.
Although a largemouth bass can be caught on a $30 reel from the Walmart, Dedrick preferred the Beastmaster electric reel, which retailed for $1,500. He owned several Beastmasters, along with Finland-made lures with scales hand-rolled into the outer foil and 14 layers of paint and lacquer, and 12-inch lures designed to swim in a scintillating S pattern. No free hand-dug worms for Dedrick. But the thing Dedrick coveted most of all was the Bass Cat, an 18-foot boat with 175 horsepower and fiberglass hull, tilt hydraulic steering, GPS, and multiple lift-out storage areas that can accommodate 3,700 tackle trays. This was the Jaguar of boats, with a hefty price tag, a boat that could not be bought with a dog food factory worker's salary.
He went on and on about that Bass Cat. I had already asked my parents for so much money in the short 14 months that Dedrick and I had been married, and I refused to ask them for a boat loan. I had told him to keep borrowing Greg and Marcy Jones' pontoon like he'd been doing, but that made him even madder. He stomped around and threw a fit like a toddler who was denied a lollipop. He wanted his own boat. He wanted to keep up with the Joneses. Literally.
Keeping up with the Joneses. A term that means showing that one is as good as the other by buying expensive cars, clothes, and yes, boats that they can't afford. Dedrick felt like the poor boy on the lakeside cul-de-sac, according to neighbor Karen Primrose.
I got on Facebook and I discovered most of Dedrick's family drove late model Grand Ams complete with Bondo and those Datsun trucks on four spare tires that blew black smoke. That kind of thing isn't going to cut it here in Lake Ripley. This is an upscale lake town. You know, big boats, fancy cars, people that drink Belgium ale instead of natural light. Dedrick was out of his element. The only thing that allowed him to fit in here was his wife's money. And boy, did he want to fit in. That's why he was shoved up Greg Jones's butt all the time. Greg and Marcy were rolling in the big bucks.
Greg Jones was a Southwestern boy, an Arizonian. He was a self-made man, the CEO of his company Incredible Cactus, which developed cactus leaf supplements that claimed to aid in weight loss, ease digestion, reduce inflammation, lower blood pressure, improve cardiovascular health, and more. His company profited $3 million in its first year. Greg met Marcy from Missouri, who had recently moved out west to lead mule tours of the Grand Canyon. They fell in love, married, and moved back to Marcy's home state, where Greg remained the CEO of a now billion-dollar cactus supplement business. The Jones wanted for nothing, while Dedrick wanted for plenty. It didn't take long for Lieutenant Columbus to raise an eyebrow at the jealousy, the discontent Dedrick Davis possessed, and he believed it had something to do with his murder.
Did Remy kill her husband because she was tired of him asking for money? No dishes had been washed that night. There was no forensic evidence that proved anyone aside from the Davises had been in that house that night. I knew Joe Billingsley, the disgruntled employee that Dedrick wrote up, was the perfect fall guy for this. I felt I had a strong enough motive to bring Remy back in for questioning.
And that's what Lieutenant Columbus did on October 21st, 12 days after the gruesome murder of Dedrick Davis. He banged on the front door of the beautiful home on the cove early that Saturday morning. Remy appeared to have been sobbing when she was face to face with Columbus on her doorstep. He told her she needed to come down to the Lake Ripley police station with him.
And Remy said to me, "I knew you'd be back."
Would Remy Davis's story about the night her husband was killed change? Find out in 30 seconds. And now the conclusion of Episode 2 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. As a distraught Remy Davis sat in a folding chair in the interrogation room of the Lake Ripley Police Department, she kept her head down. Tears poured from her eyes, and she guzzled an orange crush from the vending machine just outside the wooden door. But Lieutenant Columbus wasn't buying it. He believed her tears were those of regret, not grief. Tears, possibly, at being caught. But no, not tears of grief over the death of her husband, Dedrick. Lieutenant Columbus interrogated Remy, asked about the dirty dishes in the sink. He grilled her for nearly 3 hours in that small, stuffy room. He pried into the Davis's finances and into her anger at his fishing addiction.
I was angry that Dedrick spent so much time and money on fishing. I told Lieutenant Columbus that. I told him it was true that I hadn't been washing dishes when he was killed. But I'm not the one who stabbed my husband. I love Dedrick. I did not want him dead.
Remy was adamant in her innocence. Said Lieutenant Columbus had it all wrong. Said she didn't plant that Snoopy beanie hat that Marcy Jones found on a storm drain in an attempt to frame anyone for her husband's murder. Her hands were clean of this crime, she claimed. And still, Lieutenant Columbus relied on his tried and true intuition. His gut was screaming at him, and it wasn't because he had chili with beans for lunch.
My gut was telling me Remy knew more than she was letting on. I saw right through her charade.
And then, something unexpected. Joe Billingsley showed up at the Lake Ripley Police Department at the very time Lieutenant Columbus was questioning Remy and supplying her orange sodas. Joe said he needed to speak to Columbus right away, and he wasn't alone. The Davises and Joneses' neighbor, Karen Primrose, was by his side. Lieutenant Columbus left Remy alone in the interrogation room to sweat and to sob, to get her story straight. And he joined Joe and Karen in his office. Joe, covered in dog hair, and Karen, brimming with excitement. Karen and Joe had known one another for years. They played bunco together on Thursday nights. Of course, the murder had been the main topic of their conversation as they rolled dice the previous Thursday at the community center.
I don't think Joe had anything to do with this from the moment he was named a suspect. Yeah, Joe has a temper, but anyone who has to feed and clean up after 7 dogs every day would be expected to have a temper. And besides, he lives out in the middle of nowhere without internet access. Can you even imagine not being able to check the Facebook every few minutes? What a miserable life. I'd be angry all the time, too.
Karen told Lieutenant Columbus, as a quiet Joe sat by, that she'd done some investigating of her own. Said she dug deep into the internet and found a picture of Remy from Halloween 2012. She pulled out her phone and showed Lieutenant Columbus the screenshot from the Facebook account of one Carla Jenkins, Remy's best friend at St. Charles's prestigious high school. And there, in the photo, was Remy and friends, dressed as the Peanuts gang. Remy, of course, donned a Snoopy mask and had her arm draped around Carla as Woodstock.
My mind was blown. I mean, what are the odds that a Snoopy beanie hat was found on a storm drain right after the murder? The same Snoopy hat that Remy said she saw the intruder wearing. And Remy was Snoopy for Halloween in high school. I mean, that right there is enough to send her to the gas chamber, in my opinion.
Lieutenant Columbus said the discovery was another red flag. A red flag as big as a red doghouse.
I'm sure there are billions of Snoopy fans across the world, but I didn't think this was a coincidence. In my 22 years as homicide detective, I've learned not to believe in coincidence. Now, the Davises didn't have a dog, and that beanie hat was covered in Great Dane dog hair, but I believed it was planted in an attempt to frame Joe.
Had Remy snuck onto Joe Billingsley's property and snatched a handful of short, fine dog hairs from his Great Danes to put on the beanie? Was she trying to make him the fall guy, given his history with Dedrick? Lieutenant Columbus thought yes. And so, he printed off the photo of Remy dressed as Snoopy back in the days of her youth and re-entered the interrogation room. Remy, still shaken and finishing her sixth can of Crush, burped when he slid the photo across the table to her.
I asked her, "Remy, do you want to explain this? You want to tell me it's a coincidence that you claim someone was wearing a Snoopy hat at the murder? And Marcy Jones found a Snoopy hat a few days after the crime. And here you are in full Kodak color wearing a Snoopy suit."
Lieutenant Columbus said Remy broke down. Between sobs, she confessed that she'd been a fan of Charles Schulz's character since she was a little girl. She owned the Peanuts Holiday Collection on DVD, including It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, and A Charlie Brown Christmas. She said she did own a Peanuts beanie, too. Never wore it. Just kept it in a tote of her Peanuts memorabilia. But it had vanished from the tote not long after she and Dedrick moved into their home on Lake Ripley. She told Lieutenant Columbus that this was all just a coincidence, although he didn't believe in those.
"I may be a Peanuts fan, but I'll shout it from the rooftops until my dying day. I did not kill my husband."
And then Columbus's gut feeling changed, shifted. Oh, he still believed Remy had a hand in her husband's murder, but maybe not the hand that held the Ginzu knife that was thrust into his back. And so, he let Remy go home that Saturday evening after hours of questioning. He let her go home and rest while he stayed up all night long working with the help of internet guru, Karen Primrose. And that concludes episode 2 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers.